What we'd like to do today for a couple hours is go through our spreadsheet, and we've had discussion of revenues, non-tax revenues that are in the bill, and we'd like to have some discussion now of the other line items, the proposed cuts, proposed expenditures that are in the bill. And I'm not sure we'll finish that this afternoon because it takes there's a lot more of that. We'll try to go as long as we can, obviously, for I'm not sure, looking around the table, I think some staff, myself, we start running into, I mean, Friday night's Passover, and there's some things I have to do, but Representative Osmond.
It takes 3 hours to get home, Mr. Chair.
And that as well.
No, I'm an hour north of you, and it only takes me 2.5.
That's.
I think if you look about privilege from arrest.
Doesn't work.
Doesn't work?
No, it doesn't work.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say to Representative Rukavina that I'm not always sure when we're televised and when we're not, but there might be somebody between here in your home that's watching.
I think my car's bugged anyhow, Mr. Chair.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was yesterday, as we were going through the spreadsheet, I had a question about the items, and it was suggested that I wait until you came back to sure. Maybe help me understand. On the spreadsheet, it was line 92, which talks about a St. Paul loan repayment, advances, and forgiveness. And I see the language is on R53, but I don't really know what the fiscal impact of all that is, and I was wondering if I could get some answers.
Sure. Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chair and members, in the tracking, the provision provides for the City of St. Paul to accelerate some payments that they would otherwise make to the state somewhat earlier, having a net gain to the general fund in fiscal 08-09 of $1.5 million and in fiscal 10 and 11 of $500,000. Beyond that time, then there that provides for loan forgiveness of the arena loan. That amount, and I don't have it in front of me, but I believe is approximately $35 million over the remainder of the provision of the loan.
So the provisions, Mr. Chair, that are encouraging or stepping up or asking St. Paul to get us $2 million a little faster and then we forgive $35 million? Is that the
I think there's some people here from St. Paul if you want the exact numbers, but that would be an approximation.
It's about 34, okay. But I'm not sure.
I'd like to find a banker like that. That'd be a good deal.
Well, Representative Osmond, there is a banker like that, and I would argue it's the state of Minnesota for any number of other areas around the state other than St. Paul. I'm not one in this place who historically has just concentrated on geography. I can think of a former member of the House who once in a while was critical of myself for not you know, that everything, that I didn't suggest everything had to be St. Paul to the exclusion of anything else. So I've not been somebody who's played the geography in quite that way. But I do find it striking that, you know, this year has kind of turned into let's kick St. Paul around the block a few times. I will note that in the bonding bill that became law, there are significant proposals for convention centers, hockey arenas paid for by the state of Minnesota. Certainly the Minneapolis Convention Center was funded partially through a local option tax and partially through state support. And St. Paul seems to do a lot of this on its own. So I think those of us from St. Paul view the proposals we've had this year as an opportunity to redress what we think are some significant inequities. But if you'd like to pursue it further, I'd be happy to have folks from St. Paul spend a little bit of time on it if you'd like to.
Mr. Chair, and I'm not at this time, but I just think it was interesting. Last night we were having a conversation as to how some counties were actually being asked to repay the state of Minnesota when they had essentially been forgiven for some. And this is just the reverse. This is where we have a commitment from a county to provide some funds, and we're going to turn around and forgive them. Just interesting contrast, Mr. Chair.
Well, this conference committee is not dealing with the bonding bill that was signed into law by the governor, but I do think if you look at a lot of what's in that bill, it is striking. In fact, there are some of our colleagues from the Northeast. Duluth gets a convention center now. St. Paul just is trying to look for a little bit of equity in the process. But I recognize that, that there's a not insignificant expenditure in the out years, but we have been doing that time and time again. And like I said, I'm not one who's done everything. I've done quite a few things over the years relative to St. Paul. Some of the major efforts for St. Paul have been done by myself. I'm the person who saved the Department of Revenue from leaving St. Paul. I was the person who worked on the Science Museum legislation. But having said that, I don't necessarily get a list and start adding up dollars on one side versus another side. But it does seem with some of these arenas and convention centers that there has been some degree of inequity. And maybe we just were too quick to jump into some of this earlier. Maybe we should have waited and made sure the state helped us like everybody else. So, Representative.
Mr. Chair, just so you know, my inquiry was not geographically targeted. My inquiry, I just couldn't tell from the spreadsheets exactly what was going on, and I appreciate the explanation.
So, Reverend Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, it is rather creative, but given what happened to the city of St. Paul, our capital city, in the bonding bill, I certainly want to support you on this. And there was, I think, I don't know for whatever reason, I think you had $134 million of bonding projects, many of which were beneficial to the entire part of the state and the Central Corridor, which was beneficial to the whole metro area and not a particularly a St. Paul project at all. And you're right. You have done a lot of things for many parts of this state, and St. Paul delegation has. So I, for one, am going to support this proposal. Probably sitting at this table, Senator Tomsoni took the biggest hit. I think he had $6.9 million in the bonding bill, and he ended up with $100,000. So, he took a pretty good shot, too, and for whatever reason those shots were given, I think, at least as far as the Iron Range is concerned, the governor's come around a little bit in the last day or two. And so I'm hoping it comes around for the city of St. Paul, too.
Well, I hope there'll be opportunities as we proceed over these next several weeks. But appreciate Representative Osmond's question. It looked like you were going to say something.
Well, I was just going to mention, Mr. Chair, that on most of the proposals that were in the bonding bill, when the discussion was going on the floor of the House, you'll find my voting record was in support of those proposals. So I'm not trying to do anything other than try to find a way to resolve some of these issues. But I wouldn't have even known about this one had I not been able to make the inquiry because the documentation really didn't.
Well, and obviously that's the purpose of the hearing is to allow members of each body to inquire of the other as to what's in our respective spreadsheet and our respective bills. So that's obviously the purpose, and those questions are always appropriate. And the responsibility of whichever member to provide some type of answer. So, absolutely. If there are questions about that or anything else left over from last night, why don't we proceed going through the spreadsheets? I'm not sure, Mr. Marks, Mr. Mossman, if you decided how you're going to handle it, but just let us know which, where you want to start. Mr. Marks, you said.
Mr. Chair, I believe we're going to defer to the fiscal analysts for each area, and starting with E-12 education, I believe.
So this,
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Carlson.
If I may, what the intent today, you know, we did have the snapshot the other night when the division chairs were here, and we were going through things rather quickly. So last night, instead of a snapshot, we're kind of viewing this as an opportunity to ask about and look at some of these in a bit more detail than what we did. So with that in mind, I thought it went well last night because I think we were able to acquire a fair amount of information about a number of things on the non-tax revenue, and so that would be our intent here today.
Okay, and I would agree. So we're going to start with what, Mr. Kroll and Mr. Nauman? Is that what we're going to do?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm beginning on page 4 of the spreadsheet. There's a few summary pages on the front end, and I'm beginning on line 111, which is the beginning of the K-12 spending changes. The first change on line 111 is the operating budget reductions that the governor of the House and the Senate both made. The only difference there being that the Senate took a $30,000 reduction above the 4%.
Mr. Drummond, can you hang on one sec?
We're trying to get we've got so many spreadsheets here. At least I want to make sure I've got the right one.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, I believe that everyone was handed just recently as the committee was starting a legal size spreadsheet, which is an update, the first three pages, to what was handed out when the conference committee first held its first meeting. And then, it's in the books?
It's right here.
It's been put in the books.
I've got one here dated 4/18.
Yeah, dated 4/18, so it's in the front of your books.
Okay.
The overview spreadsheet area.
Very important date, 4/18, so we'll proceed with that understanding.
Mr. Chair, do you want to sing happy birthday to him again, Mr. Chair?
Date of Paul Revere's ride is what I... Was there something else that happened on 4/18?
18th of April of 75?
Of 75, yeah. You did a good job of singing today.
Mr. Chair, so is this an updated one and we can remove the other one, or is this just...
Yes.
Can we take out the other one?
Mr. Chair, there was the one last night that says revenues on it. That's a little different format.
Okay.
But don't take that one out, but you might want to take any previous ones out.
This colored?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, we've dispensed with the color copies.
Oh, so we can get, Mr. Chair, the colored one can, the Senate colored copy can leave then?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I kind of liked having those colored copies.
So did I. I don't know. I was as surprised as you were.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, we don't have that capability in the House.
No,
I was disappointed. I think we need to invest in some technology.
Senator Thomasoni was seeing colors last night.
I think we should make it clear that's maybe the initial concession on the part of the Senate to the House, so we'd expect something back in return.
To have colored copies.
Well, that was our concession. So, do we all have copies of this? We know what spreadsheet we're working from?
Mm-hmm. Black and white.
Yeah, the kind of dull-looking spreadsheet dated 4/18, 12:54 p.m. So, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair and members, again, one. I think we're on page 4 now. Everyone with me?
4.
Line 118 begins the E-12 changes. And I'm going to work off the columns 2008, 2009 in the middle of the page for the Senate and the columns for the same for the House, just so members are comfortable with those lines. The Senate reduction to the Department of Education was $922,000. That's a $30,000 increase above the 4%. The House made the 4% change that was recommended by the governor. Line 112 is the governor's initiative for math science teacher training. The Senate funded that at $400,000 with a tail. There was no House recommendation for that. On line 113 is the governor's iPod program, or the Minnesota Virtual Education Program. $200,000 recommendation with a tail. The next line, 114, goes with lines 115, 16, 17, and 18. The Senate funded the Best Practices Seminars Program. This reinstitutes a grouping of programs that has been historically funded in this budget area. $275,000 for the Principals Leadership Institute, $275,000 for Humanities, the Historical Society, and New Visions. The House accepted the governor's recommendation for the Principals Leadership Institute at $400,000 with a tail. I think we're up to yours now. I apologize. I skipped over. The Minnesota Teach Program was a governor's recommendation but was not funded in either body.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 121 is the it's labeled Wind Energy Production Tax Credit Offset, but as we talked about a couple of days ago, the it's not really a tax credit offset. What it is it's districts that have wind energy production facilities in their within the geographic area of the district, there is an allocation of a portion of the wind energy production tax that goes to that district, and under current law, this district's general education aid, which is funded with from the general fund, is reduced by the amount of that production tax. And the House bill proposes eliminating that that offset so that they would continue to receive their full amount of general education aid as well as the allocation of revenue from the wind energy production tax, and that has a cost in the tails of around $260,000.
And Mr. Chairman and members, on line 122 is the reverse SOD payment shift that was a governor's recommendation. It carries a savings of $6.1 million. It was carried in the Senate bill but not in the House. On line 123 is the QComp participation subtraction that both bodies did in various forms. We take reductions. This is a forecasting issue. School districts that have been permitted to participate in the QComp program are not harmed by this initiative, but both bodies recapture the growth assumption that's built into the forecast. The Senate did this last year, and the House has a position on it this year for a one-year pause in that growth, allowing the growth to come back online in fiscal 10 and 11. The Senate has a five-year pause in the growth, so it carries a reduction of $21.3 million in 8 and 9, and then $58.2 million in the tail, the health savings being 20.5. The Senate also, on line 124, recommended that since all school districts are not participating in the QComp program, that this really should be considered a grant program. So it rolls it out of the general education program. So you'll see a bit of an accounting change here on line 124, where $88.6 million is captured as savings, if you will, in the general education program. We'll see that number show up as a positive in a subsequent line as it's added back in as a grant program. On line 125 is transition revenue adjustment associated with a change to a particular school district that was affected by some calculations in the sparsity program. We're giving them their revenue back here. We'll talk about that also in a subsequent line. It's the Lancaster School District where the House has a grant and the Senate funds it through the transition revenue program. In the Senate tax bill, there was a change associated with the referendum market value tax base where the seasonal recreational property was added back onto the referendum market value. This is the tax base that's used for the calculation of equity revenue, referendum revenue, and transition revenues. To offset that, we made some changes in equalizing factors in the Senate K-12 bill. So you see a slight change of $58,000 in taxes payable, in fiscal years 2010 and 2011. The governor recommended, and the House and Senate both accepted, an initiative that the Department of Education has been working on primarily with the state of South Dakota, where there's reciprocity and tuition agreements that go back and forth when students enroll across state boundaries that carry some transition revenue costs. The initiative is the same, but there are slightly updated fiscal impacts on the Senate side relative to the House. So the language that you see in both bills is the same. We're just carrying slightly different numbers. And I think that we're in agreement that the Senate numbers probably are the most current. Finally, the on line 129 is the elimination of the permanent school trust fund subtraction. This is revenue that school districts will get roughly about $30 per pupil, begins in fiscal year 2009, carries a total fiscal impact of $28.9 million in 2009, and then in 2010 and 11, the impact is $20.6 million.
Mr. Chair, on to that point, you know, having somewhat been interested in the permanent school fund and the way it works and where its revenues come for the last 22 years, I'm just curious, you know, the money's already going into the, although it's less because I think we did something 10 years ago that allowed the fund to try to build the corpus up a little more, but so how do you, how is there a net gain to the school district if you take it away from one place and you give it back in another?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, this is an important question into how this initiative works. Back in 1971, the legislature passed a general education subtraction. So any dollar, since that time, any dollars that are generated off the permanent school trust fund that go to school districts then has an equal amount subtracted off the general education formula, if you will. It's not directly the formula, but it's a general education program. So a dollar in interest and dividends results in a dollar in subtraction. So what the initiative here is not really changing the distribution of how the school districts are receiving permanent school trust fund money, but rather we're eliminating that subtraction, which allows the districts to keep the money that they were already getting. Does that help or confuse matters?
Well, I understand that part of it, Mr. Chair, but I don't understand how the Senate, by doing this, is helping put more money into the school children's education.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I'll try it again. If the way to think about it is the school trust fund lands generate money for the permanent school trust fund, either through land sales or minerals generation, and that money goes into the permanent school trust fund. Under the Constitution, the interest and dividends that spin off of that fund are allocated to districts. So think about it this way. Let's say it's a dollar. We generate a dollar of money, and we distribute that dollar evenly to the 341 school districts. What we do under current law is make a general fund subtraction from the dollars that we are giving to districts on the general education program in an equal amount. So that dollar that we've given to districts, we're taking it away. So what the Senate initiative does is say, we're not going to take it away anymore. So what that means is districts are allowed to effectively get that dollar anew, which they were previously having subtracted off the general fund.
But, Mr. Chair, where does the dollar that you added show up on the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, you see that on line 129. Effectively, our dollar is $28.8 million.
So then where did you subtract it on the spreadsheet?
What you are doing is eliminating the subtraction, which results in a positive.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina,
admit to being the dumbest guy in the room, so I'm not tracking this because...
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, because there won't be a subtraction from the general education aid formulas, more money will effectively be paid out through the general education aid formulas. And then in addition to that, the school districts will still get their allocation from the trust fund.
Right. So I'm looking for Mr. Mossman.
So this line, Mr. Representative Rukavina, is the line that indicates the additional amount that will effectively be paid out under general education aid formulas because there will not be a subtraction.
But where's the line then that added the 60 in the base, or if you want to just go to 0809, the $28.876 million that you formerly subtracted? You had to pay for that to have a positive $28,876,000. You had to replace that money somewhere if you're going to put this on top the formula, which is what you're doing, right? So where is...
That's what they made for.
Okay, I know it's the cost of not doing the subtraction. I can track that. But Then you had to increase the general levy formula somewhere.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina,
maybe the House can fix it. There we go. Let's have the House. I just can't speak Senator. I can speak Croatian and English, but I can't speak Senator. That's got to be it. Go ahead.
If we had a spreadsheet that showed all aspects of the funding, you'd see multiple lines. You'd see a line that said, we're going to pay all districts $100 million, say. I mean, it's more like $5 billion, but say $100 million. Then we're going to pay them $25 million of permanent school fund money, or 29, whatever it is. Let's round to 25. Then there'd be a line that said, now, because we gave them that school fund, we have this subtraction in law, we're going to subtract 25 from the original 100. So you add the 100, the 25, and then the 25 we took away, and you're still at 100. So school districts are still seeing that 100. Now, in order to give them new money, the Senate says, okay, let's not take that subtraction away. Let's let that permanent school fund money go out in addition to the base $100 million. So then the net is they get the $100 million, then they get the $25 million of permanent school fund money. We don't subtract the 25 off the 100, and they're net $25 million to the good. So this just says all that money that's growing and is getting absorbed, basically savings to the general fund because we subtract, let's not subtract it anymore, and it'll show up to the districts as new money on their books.
Well, I'm getting the dialect now from the House a little bit, but I got to have this shown to me because I just don't know where that new money.
Would it help if we went back to those colored sheets?
Joanna, where are my crayons?
That's what he's saying.
That's a House joke.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Rucavina, on the base spreadsheet, we'd have those three lines. None of those are shown on here. So what we're showing here is we lose the general fund, the state general fund loses $30 million a year of savings that's now taken away from the schools, basically, and credited to the general fund is what ultimately happens. You know, with that permanent school fund money, all we're doing is saving the general fund money. So now if we don't save the general fund money, then we got to show this cost, and that's the only line you see on the spreadsheet is the not saving the general fund money.
Representative Rucavina, brace yourself.
Maybe I can
talk
to him.
Mr. Mossman thinks he might be able to help you.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Thomasoni.
Maybe I can talk to him.
Yeah, I'm not fluent in Italian.
I think it comes from Q-Comp. I think that's the easy answer.
Okay, well, then that's it. But I don't see, you don't have a Q-Comp line, and I guess that just got thrown in the general fund then, right?
There. Q-Comp line. Mr. Chairman, Representative Rucavina, you can see the Q-Comp savings in the Senate package on line 123.
Okay, you threw that money in and you placed it. Okay, that's not
is that a little bit better?
I got it.
So it's a good thing we have Senator Thomasoni on the committee to help you out.
No, he didn't. Well, yeah, that would have been a simple ask. See, somebody should have spoke Ranger to me. Or should have spoken, excuse me. Past Blue Perfect, I think, right there. I don't know what it is.
It was a Murphy.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Crow, are we going to have a line for permanent school fund in the future?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yeah, this basically would allow us to show an ongoing allocation of permanent school fund money as additional money. And, you know, we would have to decide how we'd show that in the future on the spreadsheet, but it would be easy to say districts are getting this much extra because they're not having a subtraction of revenue.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, one of the things that we do after you all make your final decisions about what you want the K-12 general education formula to look like is, in fact, go down into another spreadsheet and make this subtraction. So by not doing that, we're generating more money.
Keep it up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rucavina.
Continuing on this, I know in the House there is then language on the permanent school fund also, and I think it's $28 a kid or what, I don't know what the amount is, but on using it, is there the language in the side-by-side on the technology use?
Yeah.
And I don't know if there is an actual dedication of this money on the Senate side.
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, we were just about to get to that. Okay. The comparable House provision to the Senate elimination of subtraction is that the House bill says anything basically over what's projected for 2011 will get allocated and dedicated, will get allocated to school districts rather than continuing to offset the general fund, and that additional amount has to be spent by school districts on technology. The Senate bill doesn't dedicate its funding and starts with the first dollar. The House bill doesn't show up on the spreadsheet as a cost because there's no cost to the general fund until we exceed the projections for 2011 and start actually not subtracting, not saving the general fund money.
Well, members, just something to think over on this whole issue then over the weekend. Senator Cohen, you know, there's the university also has a permanent university fund. Both these funds, most of the, about 80% of the corpus was generated from either natural ore sales or current taconite ownership. Representative Carlson, in I believe the early 80s, with a similar deduction in the university where they were given their permanent university money and it was just subtracted from their general fund allocation. Senator or Representative Carlson changed the way that money was spent and created a endowed chair account. But the good thing that he did, which is different than what either of these bills are doing, is he required the University of Minnesota to go out and match that money dollar for dollar. And because of that, you have, I don't know how many endowed chairs that are paid out of that account, but I know Mr. Fitzmaurer told me that 15% of all the $600 million in research money that comes into the university is from what Representative Carlson did 20-some years ago. You know, I had a bill dealing with this, too, that required kind of on a Minnesota miracle formula a match like Representative Carlson required the match for the Permian University Fund, and I have that language still in a bill in the House that never went beyond a hearing in the K-12 committee, but it was a very fair formula based on local levy match. And I would hope maybe we could look at that as we move forward, because then it generates some very good revenue for technology should the Senate decide to go that route, but it also puts twice as much money in the fund in a very fair manner, and maybe we can think about that over the weekend, because I just hate to see this money disappear into the you know, school districts, because Representative Carlson had the foresight years ago for the Permian University Fund not to see it just disappear at the university level.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson.
May footnote that the very first fundraising drive the university had as a result of that brought in $325 million, if I recall. There was a lot of interest in matching that that endowment. But I have had, Mr. Chairman, a conversation with Representative Rukavina just a couple days ago on this very issue, and it truly is an idea worth taking a look at in terms of what its potential might be to generate some additional revenue, and he does have a fair formula for the distribution. So I think that's a very legitimate request to think about it over the weekend.
Okay, further discussion relative to that.
Okay, I'm not sure where we left that, Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and members, we're on line 130. This bill provides $51 per pupil in one-time aid in fiscal 09, which has a total cost of about $49 million. You see the cost is split over 2 years due to our 90-10 payment system. Then the next six lines 131 to 136, are related to the flood and the special session bill from last year. Basically, the House and Senate and the governor all do the same thing, which is take all the money that hasn't been used in those appropriations that were made last year and allocate it back to the Rushford-Peterson School District for pupil transportation and pupil loss, decline, you know, lost enrollment at that school district. The Senate has a slightly higher number on line 133 of reduction just because
The $250,000 that was in that appropriation unspent, the Senate takes the whole amount. The House and the governor had reductions of $130,000. Then on line 137, the House bill has an appropriation of $100,000 to the Virginia School District for a wall that's that blew out on them, basically. And they had asked for a fund transfer, which the Senate did, of $100,000 of their from their debt redemption fund. The House bill just gives them a grant of $100,000. And then, as previously mentioned, on line 138, the Lancaster School District gets a grant of $100,000 per year from the House for 3 years, while the Senate changes their calculation of their transportation or of their sparsity revenue in order to provide them with additional revenue of about $85,000 per year. Then on line 139, the House and Senate both give $20,000 in this biennium for a special education task force that already exists for them to continue their work. The Senate provides it in 09.
Well,
the House has an added
$8,000
with carry.
And Mr. Chair and members, on line 40 is the second half of that rollout of the QComp program from a part of the general education to a separate grant program. So you see this is a positive $88.6 million. This offsets with the general education subtraction that we saw above earlier. Mr. Chair and members, on line 141, the Senate makes a reduction to the statewide testing program of $2.25 million in the 08-09 biennium, and in 10 and 11, the reduction is $2.15 million a year, so a total savings of 4.3. On lines 143 and 144 is the Get Credit, Get Ready, Get Credit programs. The Senate makes a $1.9 million reduction in 09, and in 10 and 11, $3.3 million for the first line item. The second, the planning and assessment component is down $658,000 and $1.7 million in 10 and 11. The school milk program, shown here as the school breakfast aid line, line 145, increases from a 14 cents per carton reimbursement. This is kindergarten milk. So it's up $402,000 in 09 and $852,000 in the tail. The Senate also makes increases to the health and developmental screening aid. This is early assessment for children ages 3 through 5. Increases the reimbursement rates for that from with a whole series of changes, but up $936,000 and $2.2 million in 10 and 11. On line 147, the House and Senate have similar positions. The House position shows a $7,000 increase to offset a drafting error that was made in last year's K-12 bill. The Senate also has a position on this, but it's a levy position. So there's a $7,000 levy impact on the levy tracking. And finally, there are a series of changes to the Department of Education to pay for a variety of task forces and some administrative money. The lines 148 and 149 are changes only on the governor's recommendation associated with programs that we talked about earlier. There was some administrative money that went with those programs. The Senate funded one of those programs but did not carry the administrative money, so there's no position on that in either body. On line 150 is an outdoor education working group for $20,000. On line 151, an academic achievement planning administration, $100,000 position for the House and for the Senate, and $30,000 for the House. The Senate bill also carries some changes to the online learning program. So on line 152 and 153, there is some spending in the Department of Education for those, mostly related to an FTE, and then an extension of the Advisory Council for one more year. Finally, on line 154, the Senate gives $50,000 on an ongoing basis to the State Advisory Board on Early Learning. This is a early childhood initiative that was part of the Senate bill. And finally, the Senate and House both have fairly extensive changes to some of the testing, moving to a new report card in the overall education policy parts of the bill, and the Senate carries $188,000 of one-time administrative money for that purpose. So overall, you can see that I'm going to work across line 156 now. In 08-09, the governor's position was a reduction of $2.4 million in 8 and 9, and in 10 and 11, $10.5 million increase. The Senate position was a negative $1.1 million in 8 and 9 and down 7.7 in 10 and 11. The House position was an increase above the base of roughly $22.9 million and $2.3 in 10 and 11. So, Mr. Chair, unless there are questions, that concludes the K-12 portions of your package.
Thank you. Are there further questions, Representative Carlson?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, it's not one of the larger items, but it's one of the items that, at least on the House side, among some of our members, generated a lot of interest, and this was the State Advisory Board on Early Learning. And you have 50,000 there, but I'm trying to recall from the other night, is the Senate proposal a new advisory group? Because when I had conversations with our early childhood folks, they indicated that there was already one required by federal law, but that there was a problem in the sense that there was no funding to pay some of the costs for parents to attend the one that was mandated by federal law, and therefore they needed, I think, about 25,000 so that there would be the opportunity for parent involvement. And if I recall, you're creating, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, a second early childhood commission. So maybe that's one that we need to talk about so that we understand whether or not we're duplicating activities. Maybe they have a different mission, but I was left looking at it on the face that it was pretty much the same thing, one required by the federal that we had to do and the need for some money. And we're not too far apart on the money, but we may be heading in a slightly different direction relative to what we're requiring. And
it's new, yeah.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I think you've largely answered your own question. I mean, we may want to do a little more scrubbing on to the extent that there's some redundancy there, but it is definitely a new initiative. I think this was Senator Clark, Senator Bonoff had done a series of work on this. It is new, and therefore we carry new money for that purpose.
And maybe, I don't know if I may, Mr. Chairman, if they're part of a working group, but maybe that's something that the two bodies should have some communication with and maybe include Senator Clark then so that it sounds like we want to do the same thing and we're close, but maybe Mr. Crow has a comment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to mention in terms of the money, the House bill has an allocation of existing funds, $12,500 from two different potential pots for this task force. So but it's not general fund money, that's new spending, so it doesn't show up on the spreadsheet. So you see the $50,000 from the Senate, there's also $25,000 from the House. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of that part of it, but I was meaning the amount that would be available for the parental involvement is the $25,000, and that was my recollection. I had conversations with them that that's what they felt they needed, and we used a different funding approach, but we ended up with a number that's not too far away in terms of the goal of the commission. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further questions for either for members or for Mr. Nauman or Mr. Crow? Okay. Well, thank you very much. I think the next on the spreadsheet would be higher education. I think Mr. Berg, Mr. Albrecht.
You want to start off and I'll take over at financial aid.
Mr. Chair and members, the higher education items start on line 160 with a Senate position that has a reduction in state matching grants in the Minnesota College Savings Program in our discussions with the Office of Higher Education, they have subsequently suggested that that might be a challenge, given that the legislature made changes in the matching rates for that program. But in our earlier discussions, they had suggested that that would be a reduction that the program could accommodate. On line 161, there's a similar reduction of $250,000. That's an ongoing reduction in the interstate reciprocity payment program. Again, the Office of Higher Education has suggested to us that the program can accommodate that reduction. On line 162 is a cancellation of an appropriation that was made in 2005 for rewriting the state grant software program.
Mr. Chair, the next two lines, lines 163 and 164, are the same on both the House and the Senate. There's two things to note about this. This item could not appear on the spreadsheet. It doesn't do anything to the general fund. It's reflecting that there is going to be a change in federal aid, which will free up some state aid, which will then be re-spent at the same dollar amount within the state grant program. So they offset each other. The other thing to note about that is the original estimate of $15 million has been revised by the Office of Higher Education, now down to $11.3 million. Both the House and Senate have methods of reallocating that money within the state grant program that overlap somewhat but have a few differences. But on the other hand, if nothing is done, current law would provide for that money to get respent within the state grant program on the living and miscellaneous expense allowance portion of the formula. So,
and again, that figure is 11.3.
That's the new estimate. Yes, there was some. It's just come to light that the U.S. Department of Education is implementing the second Pell increase for 2009 in a somewhat different fashion than they previously have administered increases, and so only people who are eligible for the first increase will receive the second. No new grantees will come under the second one, which reduces the amount in the state grant program that's freed up. And that wasn't known when the original estimate was made. Moving on to line 160.
President Carlson.
Yeah, just very quickly, Mr. Berg, because that did bounce a little bit. I think it was at one point the estimate got down as far as when you and I talked $10 million or something. Is the 11.3 now viewed as a pretty solid number for our planning, or are they still potentially revising it as we put the bill together? I think we need to know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the 11.3 is the number that the Office of Higher Education has put out in a memo to Mr. Albright, myself, and members. And I'm unaware of anything that should change that number from here on out. Their original estimate of $15 million was made back before the start of the year. And then when they realized that that was being implemented differently, they called Mr. Albright and myself last week and said, well, you know, it's going to be closer to 10 than 15. And at the end of the week got us a memo which said 11.3 was the estimate.
So and the bottom line, so when the conference committee does our planning, then I think you're saying that at least from their perspective, that's the number we should use moving forward then.
That's correct, I mean, that's Mr. Chairman, solid. Representative Carlson. So. On line 165, then, are the first of the actual spending changes. Both the House and Senate eliminate $7 million in fiscal 2009 from the Achieve Scholarship Program. Members should note that that would be the first year that grants would be issued in that. So no student who there is no student who's already received a grant who will not get a grant in the future under that. And a difference there, both House and Senate take the full $7 million in 2009. The Senate eliminates the program and takes the full $10 million that are in the tails in both 2010 and 2011. The House leaves the program in place and takes seven of the $10 million base in each of the out years. Line 166 is a general operating budget reduction of 4%, which the governor applied to cabinet agencies for $111,000 in 2009. The governor, the House, and the Senate all do the same thing there. And do you want to move on to that? Then we get on to the operations and maintenance cut at the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The Senate cut $6.6 million in 2009. The House cut $6.173 million in 2009. The Senate continues their cut at the same level in 2010 and 11. The House's cut increases to 8.6 in the out years. The next item is a Senate-only item.
On line 168 is a Senate position that would appropriate to the Minnesota State Colleges and University two amounts, one to reimburse campuses for their non-resident tuition revenue. This would be campuses that responded to the legislature's decision to cut or to eliminate non-resident tuition at a specified group of campuses, and the ones that would receive funding under this provision are campuses that were not named by the legislature but subsequent to that decision made their own decision to eliminate non-resident tuition. Related to that is a provision in the Senate bill that would reimburse campuses that were affected by that decision by a decision made by the state of Wisconsin that resulted in the loss of some reciprocity tuition payments to the campuses from the state of Wisconsin.
Mr. Chairman, the next line, line 169, is the general cut for the University of Minnesota and their operations and maintenance budget. The Senate would cut the University of Minnesota by $5 million in fiscal 2008 and by $5.5 million in fiscal 2009, and then reduce their base by $5 million a year in 10 and 11. The House would reduce the university by $6,172,000 in fiscal 9, and again, the House's cut increases in the tails to $8.666 million a year in the out years.
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I noticed that the governor takes $27 million out of that same line. What did he propose to cut that's so much more than what the House and Senate did?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, both the university and MinSCU receive essentially large block grants that are based on enrollment, well, we took the enrollment formula out, but it's base budget plus or minus. So we have a big block grant. The governor simply just took a larger chunk out of both MinSCU and the university. There, it wasn't aimed at a particular part of or program.
Mr. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, the university and MinSCU are two groups that, for whatever reason, didn't appear before us, so I'll ask you, was there any feedback or maybe the chair, Representative Rukavina, would know on how they're handling the House cut, at least the $5 million, 5.5?
Mr. Chair.
Because I know we had a lot of concern, and one of the questions that I would have had with of them if they had appeared here, and there's been a ton of publicity lately, and that was one of my concerns about the governor's number, was what tuition increases and so on would have been. And any response from them that either of you could share in terms of how they would handle the 5-5? Because I would like the legislature to be particularly sensitive to the tuition issue, considering what's happening and where we rank nationally and student debt and all of those side issues that are coming forward.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Senate takes a little more from Minsky than the House does. I believe it's to help with the non-resident reciprocity. At least I'd speculate that's what it is. Take a little less than the House with the university, but I can tell you that both Minsky and the university have assured us that they can live with the cuts that we have and will absorb them without any tuition increases. And I am really fearful, I haven't seen recently now, that some of the banks are not willing to do student loans anymore. I believe an article this morning, because they don't make enough money, I guess, at 7% or whatever they're charging. That we could have the same kind, I think Mr. Laird referred to it the other day in our committee, that we could see the same type of, you know, crisis with these student loans as we're seeing with home loans. So we tried to keep it as low as possible. The governor, of course, with those number of cuts, we were told by both Minsky and the university that those would definitely have to result in tuition increases or probably, in the alternative, massive layoffs. So I think this here they're not pleased with, but they're pleased that we didn't go along with the governor's recommendation.
And Representative Rukavina, the reason I raised the question relative to the university, we can, as you know, give a little more direction to Minsky in terms of the outcomes we would like to see. But the university is sometimes, due to their unique role in the Constitution and what have you, can be a little bit more independent. And so that's why I'm asking the question. And hopefully they're not going to turn to, even for our one of our more modest numbers, for an additional tuition increase, since we're already so expensive and
Mr. Chairman,
side issues that I referenced earlier.
If I might clarify, Representative Carlson, there is rider language at Minsky in both bills that specify that under either the House or Senate cut that their tuition increase for next fall can be no more than 2% at the colleges and 3% at the universities, which is less than the board-approved 4% increase that the board set a limit on itself prior to the start of this biennium, that it would be no more than 4%. They were anticipating going below that. Both the House and Senate bills have rider language that specify it must be below that.
And
in the case of the university, there's rider language encouraging the university to take cuts in a fashion that do not impact student tuition. The U has planned all along to have an increase for next fall, but this language encourages them to take the cuts in a way that does not increase that more than they had planned.
And, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that's why I raised the question with the university, because, as I alluded to earlier, in their autonomy, we have to encourage, and that's why I was wondering if there was any feedback, and I would have liked to have had that feedback here in committee, but they chose not to participate for whatever reason.
Mr.
To
Chair.
Make sure that it isn't taken as a tuition increase, that's what I would be interested in finding out. Maybe we can communicate with them separately.
Representative Covina.
Mr. Chair, I did, you know, I have communicated with them. Neither of them, I think, chose to show up when you requested, asked if they had wanted to speak the other day, because I think they're, you know, well, like I said, well, not pleased. They're just happy that they're not getting cut more. But I think I do have a little stronger language than you might have. I just kind of put it in there for the university. So I wanted to see if they'd sue me. I don't think they would.
Mr. Chairman, I mainly wanted to raise the issue so that there's sensitivity for both of them relative to the tuition issue. And really what, you know, when we talk tuition, we're really using the wrong terminology. We really should talk cost of attendance. And that's quite a different issue, but culture is that you usually talk tuition, but we're really meaning cost of attendance, which is quite a different number. And we want to make sure we retain, at least I do, access to our higher ed systems.
Representative Rukavina, you know, Senator Pappas is here. I don't know if you had a question about the Senate position on Minsky, but the redirection of the 1.5 was within the Minsky system for the reciprocity issue. The other comment I'd make is relative to this is the governor's provided a detailing of
concerns and of the House and Senate supplemental finance bills, and I found it striking that one of his concerns is the fact that we didn't cut more for higher education, that he references the governor's budget recommended general reductions to both systems of approximately $27 million annually. This was less than a 4% reduction in their basic appropriation, which was less than most state agencies were asked to absorb. Both the House and the Senate recommend significantly smaller reductions, $5 million to $8 million annually for both systems, and that's a bad thing, according to the governor. So it's kind of an interesting way to look at it, isn't it?
I'm trying to be nice, Mr. Chair, for the governor until after next Thursday or Friday. So.
Okay. Mr. Berg, Mr. Albrecht.
Mr. Chair, the last item on line 170 is an appropriation to the University of Minnesota. It's a one-time appropriation in fiscal year 2009 to do some economic analysis of a variety of health care reform options. But before they do that analysis, there's actually money there, too, to build a modeling tool that would be available to conduct a variety of analyses.
And, Mr. Chairman, I should note that this same item is in a different bill in the House. It is in the House health care reform bill, but the same project, and I believe the same amount, is carried in Representative Huntley's health care reform bill.
Okay, let's just go ahead if you want to.
Mr. Chairman, that's it for the higher ed article. Okay.
And Representative Carlson and I just talked. I had made a reference. Thank you, Mr. Berg and Mr. Albrecht. Other questions for either Mr. Berg or Mr. Albrecht? Okay, thank you. I made a reference to the higher education concerns. We're having prepared for distribution to conferees what's titled Governor's Supplemental Budget Concerns. This document is a summary of concerns from the governor's staff regarding the omnibus budget bills. It makes reference to the tax bills as well, not just simply the finance bill, but we want members to see it so that we can get a sense of what the administration thinks, doesn't think about what we're presenting, what we've passed out of the House and the Senate.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson.
That apparently this afternoon or morning was distributed to both caucuses or staff representatives of both caucuses. So Senator Cohen and I wanted to make sure, being that the ink is hardly dry, I guess it was not too long ago that the conferees at least had had that as well, and I'm sure the two caucuses will be sending that out to the other members of the legislative bodies as well shortly if they haven't already.
All right, well, next let's go on to the Environment and Natural Resources section. Mr. Reinholds, Mr. Mueller. So whoever is going to start.
Mr. Chairman, I can start. We're working off the spreadsheet on page 5. The first item is on line 182. This is a Senate reduction of $250,000 from the land asset management provision. This was from a $1 million one-time appropriation made last year, so it's a $250,000 reduction from a $1 million one-time appropriation.
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is a $124,000 reduction for iron ore co-op agreements. This is a reduction from a $475,000 appropriation that comes from a couple different funds. The next item is a reduction of $101,000 of minerals diversification. Again, this is a reduction from an appropriation of $375,000.
Mr. Chairman, the next item on line 185 is a House-only position. It's a
general fund reduction of $200,000 related to permit activities for mining. The next item, Senate only position. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, this is a $66,000 reduction. This came from a, as a result of a fiscal note from a separate forest process that allows them to expedite how they exchange forest lands, and within a fiscal note they identified a $66,000 savings, so the Senate has captured that here, an ongoing savings. The next item was from the governor's bill. It's a just a $38,000 savings in their water assessment reports. This is a simplification in that they already published with the Environmental Quality Board the same report. So,
the next item on line 188 is a house reduction of $65,000 for the Mississippi Headwaters Board grant. That was a governor's recommendation that the House included. The next item of recommended changes is on line 190. Both House and Senate have a reduction of $22,000, which was recommended by the governor. The next item is on 191, is the Red River flood damage. House and Senate both have $30,000 reduction in these grants. 192 is a House-only position, reducing the DNR Waters Division appropriations from the 07 session by $98,000. The $98,000 is primarily made up, is money that this is a new program and was started up, and they were slow in hiring personnel, so it really shouldn't affect program operations. The next item is on line 194, is a House only position, excuse me, that is a House and Senate same position. It was a governor's recommendation. It's for a study on the parcelization of the forest industry up in northern Minnesota. It's been a big issue lately. Line 195 is a forest industry competitiveness grant. This is a House-only position of $197,000. That goes to the University of Minnesota. The next item, both House and Senate have a, on line 197, a general fund reduction of $220,000 for the parks, state parks operation. And even though it doesn't show up on this spreadsheet, I'll mention that both sides also then increase the funding to DNR parks by an equal amount from different sources than the general fund.
Mr. Chair, the next item on line 199 is a $50,000 reduction for non-motorized forest rec trails. This was in the governor's proposal also. This is a reduction from about, I think, $400,000 that was appropriated for this program last year. So it's just a $50 reduction, or $50,000 reduction. The next item, again, was a Senate and House provision carried from the governor's recommendation of a $329,000 general fund reduction in the fish and wildlife operating part of the agency. They said they would be able to accomplish these savings just through efficiencies within the department. The next item that is also a Senate and House provision is on line 202, is the $46,000 reduction in the Minnesota Shooting Sports Center. In the governor's provision, this was a $100,000 appropriation per year. The governor reduced it by 46 in 09 and then eliminated it in the tails. Both the House and the Senate just made the $46,000 reduction, so leaving about $54,000 for the program. The next item is also a one that we carried from the governor's bill. It's in both the House and the Senate. It's a $52,000 reduction in the licensing portion of the DNR.
The next item on line 204 is the prairie wetlands. The House has a $200,000 reduction in those activities within the DNR. It was a governor's rec. moving down, the next item of changes is the 208, the DNR, the Ecological Services Division. Both sides have a reduction. The governor recommended $482,000. The Senate is at a $200,000 reduction, and the House at a $230,000 reduction. So slightly different in the numbers between the House and the Senate.
The next item is on line 209. It's a Senate-only provision. The Senate takes a $383,000 general fund reduction from the Enforcement Division. Again, what's not shown on this spreadsheet is the Senate offsets that reduction with new money from the water rec account from the same amount of money. So it's a $383,000 increase then back again from the water rec account.
Next item on line 210 is a House-only position. The governor recommended an $85,000 reduction by eliminating the advanced hunter education activity or position within the enforcement division at DNR, and the House is taking that $85,000 reduction recommended. Line 211, the governor also recommended elimination of the recruitment position, saving $75,000. Both House and Senate have that same position as the governor recommended. Then moving on, line 213 is listed as a House-only. 212, I should go to first, is a planner position being eliminated in the DNR Operations Division. That was a governor's recommendation. The House has it at the $100,000 reduction. 213 is listed called administrative reductions. The House has that at a $500,000 a year reduction.
Mr. Chair, on the Senate side, these are kind of similar cuts to the previous two that the House had. The Senate takes a $844,000, we call it a general reduction. That basically includes is the $100,000 for the planner that is listed over on the House side and the governor. And then the extra $744,000 reduction is a 1% general fund reduction. So that $844,000 really should kind of be compared with the basically $600,000 from the House. It would kind of be apples and apples. The next item is that's it for DNR. The next item, moving on down to the...
Excuse me, back up. I'm trying to track these on the sheet here. And run that by me again with the comparison. The $844,000 would be compared with the House in under the grant reductions. Is that what you were saying? Or run that by me again.
Representative Carlson, the $844,000 on line 214.
Yes.
Basically lines up to the reductions that the House has on line 212 and 213, which is the planner position eliminated and administrative reductions. So they're minus 100 and 1 and 500.
Okay. Thank you. I went in the wrong direction on the lines. Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
The next item, said we're moving now to the Board of Water and Soil Resources on line 215, both the House, the Senate has a governor's recommendation for $450,000 increase for some cost share grants related to the flood this last year. And like I said, that's a Senate and House position from the governor's bill. The next item, the Senate takes a part of a governor's recommendation for grant reductions. The $100,000 reduction the Senate has here is specific to the weed buffer program. It's just a reduction in that program. This House has a $650,000 reduction in all it. Mr. Reinholz, talk about that
Chairman,
one.
Mr. Chairman, members, the House reduction, the House makes larger reductions. The primary one is from the native vegetation buffers grant that goes out. The House has a larger reduction in that grant. 217 is the drainage assistance program staff reduction. Both sides, the House and the Senate, have that reduction. The Senate is at $150,000, which was recommended by the governor. The House is $68,000 and a smaller reduction.
Mr. Chairman, the next number here on the Senate side, line 218, the Senate has an additional $100,000, just a general one-time reduction to the board.
Line 219, the House has an additional reduction for Basin Management Organization grants of $100,000. I believe that's up in the Red River Valley area. There's some grants to some non-governmental orgs up there that this would reduce that. 220 is the Star Lakes program funding. House and Senate both have funding, the House at $50,000, Senate at $100,000 for the biennium. That would be the items, change items in Bowser. 221 would be the Metro Parks regional grants, and this is a House only reduction of $162,000. That was the governor's recommendation. This one, just like in the state parks, the House position then also has a $162,000 increase from non-general fund dollars, so their total budget would remain the same. 222, it's a House only position of $20,000 to the PCA. There are several studies in the language of the bill, and this is to fund those studies in the PCA. It's related to the solid waste stream. The 223 is operating budget reductions. There are some differences in the detail, but the governor recommended 473. The Senate has that same 473, and the House position is a slightly larger reduction of $623,000 for the biennium that is directed to the PCA commissioner to make in just their general fund operations budget. Mr. Chairman, that would be the end of the environment section. We could move into the energy spending if you would like.
Is that the that's both of you as well?
And Mr. Chairman,
yes. Now, do you both do ag?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So we can
do ag.
Okay. I didn't remember. I know what the House staff does, but I'm not always totally sure on tracking the analysts for the Senate yet. We'll be learning though.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 7, the first item is a Senate position. On line 236, the Senate eliminates the second year of the E85 pump grants. Originally, there was $1.5 million appropriated in both fiscal year 08 and 09, so we did not change the 08 number. And actually, there is language allowing the whatever is left over from 08 to continue on, but we did eliminate the second year appropriation for that program. The next item is a similar position, both the House and the Senate. The Senate takes $2.8 million from the Renewable Hydrogen Initiative. The House has $2.6 million, which was recommended by the governor. This is about a $3.25 million appropriation that was made last year. So there's still some money left over for that program. Plus other funding from other funds actually can go out for this renewable hydrogen. The next item is yours.
Mr. Chairman, on line 238, there's a House-only position. This is an increase of $300,000 for the solar rebate program, an existing program. There's some slight language change that allows additional rebate activities, and this will fund some of that. Line 239 is a biodiesel Senate position, biodiesel standards report.
Mr. Chairman, this was a initiative added in the Environment Budget Division when the biodiesel bill came through it, and it was as part of an overall agreement for some different reports that would be funded out of various different areas. This was one added on the Senate side to help look at sustainability in the crops that would be needed or other crops also that would be needed to help with the biodiesel mandate.
Mr. Chairman, members, the next item would be on line 240, is a budget general operating budget reduction to the Department of Commerce. The governor recommended $46,000, and the House has that reduction in their recommendations. The Senate does not. 241, the unclaimed property compliance is a $130,000 a year increase in funding for compliance activities, and this increase of 130 then also is matched with an increase of revenue that you heard of last night on the, so that raises 260, spending 130 raises 260. The idea is similar to what you often hear of in the revenue department. 242 is a reduction of $270,000 in each year from the Do Not Call program at the Department of Commerce. This program is primarily done at the federal, this was created in the state, but also is a federal program, the Do Not Call list, and the amount of activity has dropped off dramatically in the state. That would be the changes in the energy section of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
And I neglected to ask if there were any questions in the previous section as well. So are there questions on either section? Apparently not.
I wouldn't think she would have that tune.
You want to do the...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we can jump down. The next items there were all revenue changes, so we can skip down to towards the bottom of page 7, which would be this, the spending changes for agriculture.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'll start off on line 261. The Senate has a $652,000 operating budget reduction. This is a 3% reduction from their general operating funds, which is higher than the governor had 102, which I believe is about a 1%, and the House has 302. The next item is something that both the House and the Senate has. The Senate has a one-time withdrawal or holdback of the ethanol payments that would go to Gopher State, which results in a $310,000 savings. The Senate just did that savings didn't redirect the money anywhere for the, at least in 2009, and it was just a savings to help the bottom line.
Mr. Chairman and members, the House is slightly different. It does have the $310,000 reduced. That is that the payment to the St. Paul ethanol producer that's no longer producing ethanol. The House position also has it reduced out in the 2010-2011. And in the House position, that dollars is directed to stay within the Department of Agriculture. That's why it's listed on 263 as increases in the tails. The use was not actually decided upon in the bill, but it will be available for expenditures and or appropriations by the committee as part of the base for the Department of Ag in the next biennial cycle.
Governor doesn't like
that. Sorry, Holtz, good. Could you remind me now, when you mentioned the Gopher State, that's the one that was closed or bankrupt or whatever. So what is our future obligation there?
Chairman Carlson, you are correct. That is the ethanol plant that was in St. Paul that went and stopped production and actually has gone into bankruptcy. Our future, these payments are the deficiency payments. If you recall, there was a period of time when the 20 cents a gallon payment was lowered to 13 cents and with a promise to make up that difference at some date in the future. In statute, we're making up those payments. This ethanol producer was in operation during that period, so they received payments at 13 cents but had a promise to receive the other 7 cents. And we are now making those payments to all the other producers. This actually stops those payments to this bankrupt and out-of-business producer. You said, what are our obligations? It's been, up until this law change here, it's been determined that in the bankruptcy court that was an asset and that the creditor as part of the bankruptcy, those payments were directed to be or at least listed as an asset through the bankruptcy, and we have been continuing to, the Department of Ag has been making those due to that. This now then changes the law and says no, those payments will no longer be made.
So that's, I guess, the bottom line in terms of the question is that they stop them now. So we're, if this is enacted, then we no longer make any payments.
Mr. Chairman, that in the House position.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If it's adopted, it would be no longer any. In the Senate position?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's not really reflected totally on this spreadsheet, but the Senate does also make hold back on those payments in 09 and also in 10 and 11. However, it directs the Commissioner of Ag to, it's pretty loose language right now because it was a floor amendment, but to kind of try finding out who some of the debtors may be that the bankrupt company still may owe some money, things like grain elevators and things like that, and would direct the Commissioner of Ag to see if they could find a way to get the money to some of the people that might still be owed money. But like I said, this was a floor amendment on the Senate side, and so it's pretty wide open language right now, just kind of directing the commissioner. And it wouldn't happen until the next biennium. So I think there'd be some time to figure out if there's a way to get the money that would otherwise go to the bankruptcy holding company or whatever it is now and to some of these other debtors that are owed money yet from the old Gopher State Ethanol Company. So the Senate does have some language like that dealing with the 10 and 11 payments.
Hey, Representative Osmond.
Well, Mr. Chair, just going to make comment that I think that's something for us to really look into. I know there's a lot of small operators that were really hurt when that, and they have not received their money. Some of the subsidies that have been going back have essentially gone to some of the bigger players, and the small rural Minnesota people that got hurt have been overlooked.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Osmond's correct. Since the passage of the Senate language or this whole issue was brought up, I think a lot more people have surfaced and said they were owed money. And so there may be, I don't know if the money that's being captured here in the tails even would be enough to pay back everyone that was owed money or not, or if we'd have to set up some sort of rationing system, or I don't know how to do it, but it would take some additional work, I think, in the next biennium to figure out a way to properly address this issue. But at least I think on both, especially the Senate side and maybe even the House side, depending on how you look at, there is a way of capturing that money and trying to use it for in some way of dealing with that issue.
So if I understand this, so then this was a subsidy that was cut back for production, and they continue to draw the subsidy even though they're no longer producing. In fact, I'm not sure the St. Paul plant ever produced, did it? Wasn't there some controversy as to whether environmental issues in terms of whether the plant was ever to go up? I'm not in Ramsey County, and I just vaguely remember some of the debate that was going on about whether there was to be a plant there at all.
Mr. Chairman, they did produce ethanol at that plant.
Oh, they did. Okay.
These payments were for produced ethanol. The reason that we are doing any payments now is they produced during the period when the budget reduction problems that we had 4 or 5 years ago, we reduced the payments from the 20% that were in the law to only 13%, but then promised at some time in the future to make up that difference.
For what had been produced.
For what had been produced.
That clarifies.
They were being paid for gallons that had been produced, yes, but in the past.
Yeah. So they're not being paid for gallons that were not produced. There's
Mr.
no phantom
Chairman,
gallons
correct.
There or something. Then. Okay.
Next Thank item, you. Members, I believe I would move down would be the line 264 would be the livestock grants. Both House and Senate are funding that program, the House at $2.385, the Senate at $700,000. The next item at 265 is a House-only position, $60,000, which is a grant to the Washington Center for Internships and Academic Seminars. This is a small grant that's related to some United States Department of Agriculture money that needs a matching money. Line 266, House-only position, is a minus reduction of $200,000. This is a grant that was in the 2007 appropriations for Elk River. It's a plasma torch, a plant that was awarded money and apparently is not going forward with this, hasn't entered into any contract with the NDA for the grant that was appropriated, and it's now being reduced. 267 is a $310,000 increase, house-only position for increased groundwater monitoring in the Department of Ag. That's the end of the Department of Agriculture changes. 268, we'd be moving into the Animal Health Board. Both items here are related to bovine TB response. House position is total of $6,034,000 for the biennium. The Senate has it broken into two pieces. The House has dollars in there for the same purposes. It's just displayed somewhat differently. It's the Senate has it on 268 at 2724 for the board, and then also the herd buyout, which has been created is being created in separate bills in the House or in this bill in the Senate at $3.5 million.
And Mr. Reinhold, that's the one we passed yesterday, if I recall.
Mr. Chairman, it's Representative Olin's bill, yes.
Yes, that we passed on the House yesterday.
Yes.
Okay, could I go back up to these grants, because there's a significant difference between House and Senate, the livestock grants. The $2,400,000 now. We had some discussion about the policy on that yesterday. What is the difference? I mean, is it just a best guess as to the number of grants that are, I mean, it's quite a significant difference in the numbers there. Maybe for Mr. Reinhold, are we doing that the Senate's not with our higher number?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the House would be doing considerably more grants than the Senate would be. This new funding, so it's a little bit difficult to predict exactly how many people would choose for that. We've had some loan programs related to it that haven't been used much, but it's expected that a grant program, as you would expect, would be much more heavily utilized. I think the Senate position probably has more to their amount, and I maybe shouldn't speak for them, has more to do with what their target was for their bill, I would guess. But, The House had a larger total target in spending in eggs, and I believe that that's the 2.385 is not expected actually to fulfill the demand for that money, even in the way it's written.
Mr. Chairman, not speaking for Senator Vickerman, but probably what Mr. Reinhold said was right. I think the Senate, if had a larger target, would have probably liked to go a little higher on this. However, it is a new program, it's a new initiative, and we put what money was left over with our target into this program.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I was asking, there's a significant difference in the number, and then yesterday in committee we had a fair amount of discussion about, and my background is not agriculture other than visiting farms once in a while that were in the family, different animals and whether they were being covered or not, and I didn't know if there was an underlying policy difference here, but apparently it's just a number that you'd be able to give some grants with 700, and we'd be able to give more grants with 2.3 or 2.4, and Mr. Reinholz, you're saying that number, best guess, might not even be enough then. So that's something I think we maybe will have to have more discussion about. I was mainly interested in the wide difference there for the program.
Mr. Chairman, the grant language is, the Senate carries the grant language in this bill. The House has it in a separate bill. And for the most part, well, having looked at it in great detail lately, I think there are a few changes, differences in between the bill about eligible, things that might be eligible for the grant and amounts and things like that. I think it's all fairly close, but I don't think the difference in the language drives the amount that is appropriated here all that much. It's more, I think each side put what they could into this program. And I'm sure it would be used up, both sides' numbers would be used up pretty quickly.
So fewer grants versus a few more grants.
And probably maybe, so, Mr. Chairman, yes.
Maybe demand even greater. Okay, thank you.
And on the bovine TB, again, you mentioned that this was the bill that was passed both on the House and the Senate yesterday. So the what was passed was the Senate amount. I know between the House and Senate here, we have a little bit different amounts, but what was passed yesterday was the basically amount being carried on the Senate side and same as the governor.
I'm reminded that due to an amendment, I think it was in Ways and Means, that we matched the Senate numbers,
okay.
So they are now the same, and if they're the same, I assume they're probably on the way to the governor, so that may be one that we drop off here then. I guess that would be it. I mean, we deliberately lined them up. So that, isn't there a timeline that we had to meet there, like May 1st or something that was the goal, I think?
I'm trying to recall,
but they wanted to move fairly rapidly for whatever reasons to get things certified or to stop the spread and so that at any rate, they're matched, as I understand
right.
it.
And Mr. Chairman, also in addition to that, it doesn't show up on this spreadsheet, but that bill that passed the House and the Senate yesterday also had an assessment, like I forget, that would collect about, I think, another $650,000 or so. That would it's often a different account, in a special revenue account, that would also be used by the Board of Animal Health in their activities tied to bovine TB. So in addition to the general fund that is tracked here, the appropriation, there's also some money that will be assessed from some of the farmers up in that area that will then be spent by the Animal Health Board.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that is it for the ag area. On to the next page, 8. These are the changes in Veterans and Military Affairs, and I'll let the House start
off. Mr. Chairman, on 274 would be the first change in Vet Affairs, the House-only position increasing the grants to the County Vet Services offices by $500,000. That was a recommendation of the governor, and the House has that in their recommendations. The next item on 276, State Soldiers Assistance Program increase. Both House and Senate have increases, House at 3.5, Senate at 2.5 for additional dollars for that program over the biennium.
Mr. Chairman, the next item is on line 277. This is a $125,000 additional money for state navigators. This is from the governor. The governor had 120. We ended up with 125, and the House did not do that. And the Senate made it a one-time. This is our positions that sort of help people returning to wade through all the different programs and things like that that might be available for veterans. The next item, both the Senate and the House have. The Senate has $500,000 for veteran caseworkers. This was the same request from the governor. The House has $1 million for that. The next item is called the Link Vet Linkage Line Funding. The governor had proposed $220,000 for this. The Senate has added $100,000. The House has done the $220,000 that was in the governor's bill. The next item is with the Veterans Claim Office on line 280. Both the House and the Senate do $250,000. The Senate makes it one time. The House has it continuing like the governor did. The next item is from a separate bill that was not in the governor's initiative for the veterans paramedic of $100,000. Both the House and the Senate have that. That's an initiative that helps returning veterans with similar EMS-type skills to help them get certified as paramedics here back in the states.
The next item on the list, line 283 is the labeled GI Bill modifications. This is a House-only position. This bill made changes to eligibility and grant amounts that are given out through the higher HESO office to returning veterans. It's a current existing program. These changes would add $600,000 in the biennium to the expenditures for that program. The next item is a house-only position. There's a peer-to-peer counseling appropriation of $25,000. Peer-to-peer counseling is a program proposed that would form basically volunteer groups that would provide the group counseling kind of on the way that was usually described based on the sort of the model of Alcoholics Anonymous or groups coming together and sharing with people that with other veterans and basically ran by veterans. That's why the appropriation is one time only. It's just to do some startup costs on that. The next item is 285 is a house only $1 million appropriation, one time only for improvements to the medication distribution system in the veterans' homes. What this would do is automate and hopefully improve the efficiency of their prescription distribution system throughout the veterans' homes. 286 is slightly different. The governor recommended $250,000 for a study outreach and education related to these two items of returning veterans, both the traumatic stress and the brain injury. The House position is that it would fund not outreach and education, but rather the development of a treatment plan. I believe the Senate has the governor's language that was outreach and education along with the study.
Mr. Chairman, the next item, the Senate does the governor's recommendation of $100,000 for additional marketing services in Veterans Affairs. The Senate, however, makes that just a one-time appropriation as opposed to the governor had it ongoing. The House did not do that one. The next item is one that is funded, is a governor's rec that both the House and the Senate have incorporated of $250,000 for the Minnesota Assistance Council. This helps homeless veterans. The next item, again, is a provision that was in the governor's proposal that both the House and the Senate has. It's a $200,000 appropriation to help study the operations and capacity of the vets' homes, especially the Minneapolis campus, and especially with the transfer of the board the governance and everything else. So this was a governor's recommendation. The next item is a tails-only issue. The governor recommended in the governor's budget, they're carrying a $325,000 per year cost in 10 and 11 and out for the operations of a new cemetery in northern Minnesota. The Senate picked up that language also, just a matter of tracking-wise to get that money in the base for the out years.
Line 291 is a house-only reduction of $1 million. The Vets Home Board activities are being transferred to the Department of Veterans Affairs, and the House has basically directed them to find $1 million worth of savings in the combination of these two previously separate state agencies. Line 292 is
On that one, that was one I don't know if you were here at the time, Strenholz, but that was an area that the department was quite concerned about when they testified the other night. And I pointed out that I had heard that that was a number that they had indicated they could save, but they were concerned. And I'm just curious if you have any more information about that or if we've gotten any further feedback in terms of whether they'd be able to handle that. It sounded to me like there was a bit of an internal, I don't know if I would want to say disagreement, but they weren't internally on the same page as to what the potential savings might be, I guess would be the best way to say it.
Mr. Chairman, I would say that we're still there's still discussion going back and forth between the legislature and the executive branch, the Veterans Affairs Department on in the previous Veterans Home Board on exactly what level of savings will be achieved by them on the combination of these two entities into one. I don't think it's completely true to say that they ever testified that they could eliminate that $1 million.
And I wasn't there. I had just heard that through the grapevine somehow.
Mr. Chairman, I think there was some misunderstanding on their testimony, and maybe I would not want to say that they've agreed that they can make these cuts. I do know that I'm continuing to talk with them, and I can add a little bit of information. It's the Board of Directors is a separate appropriation to the veteran home boards. There's appropriation to operate each one of the homes, and then it's basically central operations has an appropriation that for the current year is $2.2 million. And they have only expended at this point in at the end of the third month of this year, they had only expended $1 million. So with only 2.5 months left, they have an unexpended balance in excess of $1.2 million. So exactly how much of that could be saved is what we are still discussing.
That's kind of complicated. Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Mr. Chairman, if there aren't any, that was the end of the Veterans Affairs. There's one more item. Line 292 in the Veterans Affairs is the GI Bill funding reduction. Both House and Senate have reductions in this. This program, Mr. Chair and members, provides tuition for returning veterans, was funded at $6 million last year. And the estimates are that they were only going to utilize $750,000 in 08 and $1 million of the $6 million appropriation in 09. So by making these reductions, we aren't taking away any benefits from any potential veterans returning. We're just lining up the funding with what is now the expected expenditures. That would be the last item in Veterans Affairs.
Senator Frederickson. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to share some information with the conference committee. When the Department of Public Safety was before the committee, I asked them how many support our troops license plates they had sold, and I got a very incomplete answer. And since then, I have a memo from a staff person at Veterans Affairs. And through March, they've sold 31,870 plates. Other members might be interested in that because it's the kind of question we sometimes get asked.
How does that compare to the Indian wildlife?
Far less. I don't know exactly how many are. Maybe Mr. Mueller knows, but I'm guessing like a quarter million. Maybe Representative Osmond knows.
Yeah. We'll find out. Okay. Mr. Mueller?
Mr. Chairman, we'll start now the last agency in this area, Military Affairs. On line 297, the Senate has a $150,000 reduction in the state addition in the state navigators, which is a little bit less than what the House and the governor had, which is $180,000. The next item is a medic requalification bonus of $135,000. This was a governor's initiative that's both in the House and the Senate. The next item on line 299, both the House and the Senate have similar language asking the Military Affairs to do a study of the Youth Challenge program. On a fiscal note, they identified a small cost for this, so the Senate paid for it for $15,000. Line 300 is, again, a governor's initiative, $75,000 for an employer support program. Both the House and the Senate have that number. And that is it for the spending changes. One other, I guess, item that was kind of talked about yesterday is the Camp Ripley Land Fund. There are some expenditures in non-general fund that relate to that, but that basically was a governor's provision that the Senate picked up of transferring the governorship of some of the logging lands at Camp Ripley and allowing them to sort of run and
say a half hour.
Manage their own forest lands there.
No.
And that is it.
Okay. Further questions for for either analyst, for Mr. Reinholz or Mr. Mueller? Okay. Well, thank you. Okay, Representative Carlson and I have been talking earlier.
Multitasking.
Yeah, earlier today we spent 10 minutes talking about Representative Murphy's ride back home. So we thought, because economic development gets to be a little bit complicated, and it looks like Representative Rukavina is not here, that we would stop at this point and pick it up Monday. And where's Ms. Gelman or Ms. Dornfell? Okay. What? We have session, 11 o'clock?
2.
Pardon?
We're at 2. The House is at 1:30.
Oh. Well, let me talk.
Senate goes in at what?
2 o'clock. Okay. Well,
I wonder you may. You're not there at all. You're not back until session.
I'm Sunday night anyway.
Open the way.
Back here in London.
These cops are scheduled for an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, then we can recess for session. Yeah.
How about if we start Monday at noon? If we're in, I'm sorry, again, the House is in session?
1:30.
Does that work then, if we're in session 2? Does that work for House members if we work for about an hour and a half and
recess.
And then recess, and we'll start again a half hour after the last body adjourns. One thing we'll have to talk about, Representative Carlson, is I know I've been hearing from some of the Senate conferees and chairs relative to time for working groups. So
perhaps Monday morning would be a good opportunity for them if they were emailed that might be a good time.
Yeah, that we're not going to start till till noon.
We don't have any numbers to work from yet, do we?
No, we're working through those. So,
when you guys get done, then we'll go to work.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, with the working groups, does this conference committee really create that much conflict for them? In terms of when they would meet, I haven't been involved with any working groups. I don't know how many of our conferees have been involved. I do know that Representative Murphy has been involved with at least one, and I don't know if Representative Wagenius, have you been involved with?
We're trying to schedule one on Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the people I heard from was Senator Anderson. So.
So not all of our conferees are necessarily involved with the working group. Kind of the idea was that so maybe they can, to some degree, work around our floor sessions and these sessions.
Mr. Chair, are you thinking of the policy working groups or the
budget
working groups?
To the extent there's some intersection, either or.
Right now, Mr. Chairman, I think what we would have to be talking about would be we've asked them, the last memo that we had to the working groups was to ask if they wouldn't continue to work on the policy and to resolve the similar language. That would be something that they could probably resolve a whole lot faster than we could here in conference committee, you know, the subtleties of some of the similar language that we may or may not know the importance of what appears to be a fairly close language item but might be very important to the authors or chairs that might have been involved with that. And we don't have, we're still working on the issue of what the target or goals would be, so it's hard for them, quite frankly, or us right now, because there's communications with the governor and what have you on the number side of it, and you all saw the memo on some of the policy issues, so hopefully they'll be able to work on whatever policy they might have that they're interested in working on. And I guess the best thing that we can say, if my Senate counterpart agrees, is that we're still kind of waiting on how the numbers are going to be handled.